This is Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by Southwest Wisconsin Technical College in Fenimore. Did you know that Southwest Tech is for people with a passion for golf? That's right. They offer a golf course management program with a 100% job placement rate. The program helps students learn the industry and turn that passion into a rewarding career. The golf course management program at Southwest Tech is led by PGA professional Scott Kennedy. He also coaches the Chargers golf team in the NJCAA. Men, women, there are golf opportunities for everyone at Southwest Tech in Fenimore. To learn more, go to swtc.edu/golf for more information. Joined by Gary D'Amato, I'm Rob Hernandez. We welcome you to Talking.Golf on the day after what could be one of the U.S. Opens, Gary D'Amato, that they talk about for a long, long time, because Bryson DeChambeau has backed up the talk, backed up the work, and he won the U.S. Open going away. I never saw this one coming. I'm sure you did.
I didn't see it coming. I don't think anybody – Rory McIlroy, guys like that are saying they never saw this coming. Yeah, he's kind of – he's the Frank Sinatra of golf right now. He's doing it his way, Rob. And it's different than it's different than anybody else, how everybody else is approaching it. And you're right. I mean, he's gotten teased a little bit. He's gotten questioned. He's gotten criticized. But he stuck to his guns, and he's doing it his way, and ran away with the U.S. Open. I mean, he was, three levels above everybody else. He won by six, but, I mean, clearly he was by far the best player last week. So really interesting what it could do to golf and what it could mean to golf going forward. He's a trendsetter.
He said emphatically at the beginning of the week, Gary, last week at this time, when we were looking at the pictures of the rough, the potential that, anybody who hits it in there could be chopping it out and just in a world of hurt. He hit 41% of the fairways all week and lived to tell about it. How do you do that? And how do you go into a U.S. Open and say, I'm going to still bomb and gouge and then be able to get get the U.S. Open title with those kind of stats driving the golf ball?
Oh, Rob, no kidding. I mean, the USGA, they went back to the old U.S. Open template of, narrow fairways, lots of rough, deep rough, a tree-lined course, greens rolling, crazy greens rolling at crazy speeds. And DeChambeau made a DeChambeau's of it. I mean, he was so good. And it leads me to think, what can the USGA do now to protect par? I know it was only one guy, but I think he's on the forefront here. I think there are going to be more like him. Maybe not necessarily doing it exactly the way he's doing it, but, I mean, he's a trendsetter. And, people followed Tiger Woods when Tiger started working out and getting bigger and stronger. Other guys did. Brooks Koepka was maybe the next guy to come along who was demonstrably stronger, bigger and stronger than everybody else. And now Bryson's taking it to another level. So it's going to be interesting to see what follows here in golf, I think.
And obviously he's pushing the envelope with regard to what his body looks like and for his frame. And what he can get out of it. And, when I saw him at the Farmers Open a couple years ago, he was your average college kid coming out of college, Gary. I mean, he was, he had the flat-billed hat, but he was, a little bit taller than most golfers, somewhat solid, but not nearly as solid as he is now. Now, the story is that he put on 20 pounds between the start of the season and the COVID-19 pandemic starting, and then put on another 20 pounds during the break. And doing it in such a way that it's not just, pounds, it's muscle mass. And it's done to try to add the right kind of mass in the right places so you can still make a turn on the golf ball. But in his case, he's driving, I think what did he average, like 345, 355 yards off the tee, longest hitter in, driving average over the week of a U.S. Open by a champion ever. It's hard. And the other guys, you mentioned it, Rory McIlroy in his interview after his round yesterday said it, and I think he pretty much speaks to everybody. It's hard to wrap your mind around what Bryson DeChambeau has done and whether it can be done by other people the same way.
That's a good point. I mean, Bryson could be a one-off because golf is the first, second, and third most important thing in his life. He does not have a wife. He doesn't have kids. He's not designing golf courses yet. Probably will someday. I mean, he's not writing books. He is totally focused on what he's doing. He wants to be the best player in the world. And clearly, if he's not right now, he's certainly on his way. And, you know, there's a question of whether other people would want to make that sort of commitment to what he's done, to reshaping his body, to spending hours and hours in the weight room, in the gym every week, to train both swinging lefty and righty so he balances his body. And then you add the nutrition side of it. You know, I don't know that, you know, golfers make a lot of money when they're successful on the PGA Tour. Not that they get complacent, but I mean, it takes a lot of hard work to do what he's done. I don't know if there's that kind of guy is out there all over the place, but I'm sure others will come along like him. And he's definitely showing what can be done with the human body and how far you can take it in golf.
Gary, from what you've been able to observe, what makes him different than Tiger Woods, Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, all very fit golfers, commitment to fitness? It's a little bit different. I liken it to maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm likening it to those kind of golfers merged with, you know, maybe Sheldon from Big Bang Theory, where he, I mean, Bryson DeChambeau has all the numbers about all the stats on everything that could go into, you know, launching a golf ball, everything that can go into putting a golf ball, chipping a golf ball. I mean, he knows what he's looking to get out of each golf club statistically and almost scientifically. And mixing that with now, you know, a more fit, buff, muscular body.
Exactly, Rob. He's coming at it from a non-traditional way. He's not following in the footsteps of golfers that came before him and have added something or have tried something a little different to get a little better. He's coming at it from a different angle entirely, melding the science with the physical and the mental. I mean, he's putting it all together and, you know, the same length irons. I mean, that's so different than what everyone else is doing. If you watch him putt with the rigid arm lock, I mean, that looks so much different. His swing looks different than anybody else's out there. He's just coming at it from a completely different angle. So, you know, you don't see other people out there like that doing what he's doing. But, you know, will people come along and try to do what he's doing? I think so, because he's proved how successful it can be.
The so you mentioned the shafts of the clubs are all the same length. Now he's talking about going to a 40-inch driver, and I can't remember who they were talking about last night on Golf Channel after the round from the PGA Tour champions that, you know, tried using the 48-inch driver, and people were laughing at him. I mean, and then they made a comment on the telecast all weekend that nobody they've seen using a driver tease the ball up as high as Bryson DeChambeau. Are we getting away from golf and coming, you know, where golf meets T-ball? And how does the length of the golf club, Gary, fit what he's trying to do with the way he swings at it?
Yeah, that's a good question, Rob. You know, he's already got his ball speed up to 210 miles per hour. You know, Sergio Garcia, I remember watching him. I was at an outing somewhere after the Masters one year, and they had him on a launch monitor. And his ball speed was about 175. And I think ball speed right now for the really big hitters is 185 in that range. Well, Bryson's at over 200. He's in the 205 range. And he wants to get his ball speed up to 215 or 220. And with a 48-inch driver, if he hits it even just reasonably straight, I can't imagine if he brings that driver to Augusta National what he could potentially do to the Augusta National Golf Club. I mean, we remember when Tiger came along in 97 and blitzed the course, and they Tiger-proofed it and added, you know, added 500 yards and added a second cut. What are they going to do now if Bryson suddenly is hitting his driver 370 yards on every hole at Augusta National?
Well, now we know why they haven't stopped buying property around the club, right, Gary? I mean, they may be building the Bryson DeChambeau course down there at Augusta National at some point. But I think before we see that, don't you think we'll see the USGA step in and kind of put the stop sign up?
Well, that's been you know, talked about for such a long time, and a lot of people say it's too late. A lot of people say the USGA should have acted on this a long time ago, especially with the ball. It's going to be hard to, do now. How do you legislate equipment when you're going to have lawsuits thrown at you by everyone who makes balls and clubs if you try to rein things in now? But, you know, for the good of the game, maybe it's really time to look at the ball, Rob, at least as we're talking about the PGA Tour, not guys like me and you. We need all the help we can get still. But maybe it's time to really have a serious discussion about the golf ball and reining it in a little bit.
Last thing about Bryson DeChambeau, the newly minted U.S. Open champion. A lot of people have compared his swing to Mo Norman with a single plane swing. I'm not sure it's totally there, Gary. And it's interesting because a while back, there was a guy that taught that swing up in northern Wisconsin. And, you know, thinking that it was going to come back, it really hasn't yet. I see some similarities. I also see similarities in the way Bryson DeChambeau follows through to combination. I think if you put Arnold Palmer and Lee Trevino in a blender, the follow through kind of feels like, you know, shades of yesteryear in the old Shull's Wonderful World of Golf, where, you know, he comes through and he just, not that he jerks it, but he, you know, he doesn't leave anything behind. I mean, if he's going to hit driver, he's not going to hit it, you know, at three-quarter speed. It's going to be full throttle.
Yeah, and he's, you know, he's proven that all year. He's proven that when you look at his driving statistics, he doesn't hit a 280-yard bunt. I mean, he's full bore on everything. And, you know, I just think of Augusta National. If he brings that 48-inch driver there and he's got reasonable control over it, you know, the first hole, I mean, he's going to be able to drive it up there 30, 40 yards short of the green. And instead of having seven irons in, like, you know, like guys have had in the past, he's going to have a little flip wedge. And he's going to do that to all the hole. I mean, the par fives, he's going to have little wedges into every one of them. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens at Augusta National come November, Rob.
Yeah, November 12th through the 15th, the next one on the calendar, the Masters Tournament. And it's going to be epic because – you know, we're late in the year and winding down, but also gearing up. I mean, this is the time of the year that most years guys are getting ready to, you know, unveil new sponsors, sometimes new clubs, sometimes new everything. And yet here we are still, you know, with one major to go before Thanksgiving, and that kind of compacts the whole deal. And I tell you what, if you're Bryson DeChambeau, you don't change a thing. It's just it's working, and we'll see how many others follow. You are listening to Talking Dot Golf, sponsored by Southwest Wisconsin Technical College in Fenimore. They offer a golf course management program with a 100% job placement rate after graduation. The two-year program helps students learn the industry and turn their passion for golf into a rewarding career. You can find out more on their website at swtc.edu/golf. The other big event over the weekend, at least it turned into that, was the Pure Insurance Championship out at Pebble Beach. And, you know, Jerry Kelly out of Madison has done one thing really well on the PGA Tour Champions, and that's play well in the final round. And he almost pulled it off yesterday. He shoots 65 and then gets into a playoff with Jim Furyk. And then it's a laser show into that 18th green in the playoff. And Furyk knocks one to 3 feet, and Jerry Kelly's 10-footer slides by. I tell you what, for the kind of the sideshow to professional golf on Sunday, that wasn't too bad what Jerry Kelly and Jim Furyk did.
No, and you know, Rob, I didn't see any of it, obviously, and I looked at the scores, and I knew Jerry had some ground to make up on the leaders going to the final round. And when I looked at the scores, he was tied for the lead at 12 under. And I'm like, what happened here? He shot 65. Jerry's been a top 10 machine, Rob, you know, so is Steve. I mean, I'm going to have to go through the records and look at how many top 10 finishes combined they have and percentage of top 10 finish. But Jerry is making hay while the sun shines as he advances into his 50s here. He's had a remarkable resurgent career on the Champions Tour.
Well, here is what the PGA Tour Champions media staff provided after the round yesterday. That was the seventh runner-up finish for Jerry Kelly in 4 years in the PGA Tour Champions to go with seven victories. Here's his top 10 finishes in 4 years, 38 of them, 38 top 10 finishes. It's unbelievable.
That is. That's, I mean, we're talking about smaller fields, granted, and we're talking about maybe 30 guys in those smaller fields who have who aren't going to finish in the top 10 every week. But still, I mean, to be that consistent, Jerry's he's really underrated, I think, for what he's gotten out of his career with his level of talent. Not that he doesn't have talent. Obviously, he does. But physically, he's not what a lot of other guys are, you know. He doesn't hit the ball a long way. He doesn't kill it. But one thing he's got really going for him is a great head on his shoulders. He's got an enormous amount of self-belief. He believes he's the best player every time he walks to the first tee. And that makes up for a lot of other, you know, shortcomings that he might have. I mean, he's gotten a ton out of his talent, and he's had an unbelievably great career.
Well, and the one thing he's done really well lately is he's been able to minimize slumps, and he's played through, you know, in 17, 18, and into 19 a little bit, you know, through some injury related slumps. But, you know, this year it just kind of, you know, the game came and the game went. You know, didn't start out real well out in Hawaii before the pandemic. And it got real bad by the Hogue Classic right before that I saw him over in Newport Beach. And then, you know, I think the break did him some good. He got rested. He got healthy. One of the things he commented on was the fact that, you know, he didn't have as big, you know, long an off season. It didn't feel like, you know, as he's had in the past. And, you know, all of a sudden you're back at it. And you know, each year you add to your, you know, out there on the PGA Tour Champions, you're getting closer and closer to 60. And I believe he's 53 now, but will be 54 soon. And so that's kind of where, you know, where Jerry Kelly is. But T7 at the Alley Challenge that Jim Furyk won. Then he wins his first major, Jerry does, at the Bridgestone Senior Players. You know, a couple off performances down at the Bass Pro Shop event and the Ozark Nationals event and the Charles Schwab Series. But then he comes back T6 at Sanford with a 66 in the final round, and then a final round 65. You see, he shot 64 in the final round of tournaments about three or four times over the years. And then, Gary, the one thing I looked up for the story that we wrote today was the fact that, you know, he's been number two in third round scoring average on the PGA Tour Champions each of the last 3 years. Came into this week, this past week, you know, like 14th, and that's unlike Jerry Kelly. But he's been number two twice behind Bernhard Langer and once behind Kevin Sutherland. But it just goes to show you that, again, speak to what you did, that fight in Jerry Kelly goes right down to the wire.
Yeah, and it's not going to get easier. I mean, he's still got a nice window open in a few years ahead here to pile up a bunch more top tens and victories. But now, you know, Jim Furyk has proven that he's going to be a force to contend with on this tour, and it sounds like he's going to play almost exclusively on the Champions Tour. Ernie Els obviously is going to be stiff competition, and you know, if Phil Mickelson starts playing in Champions Tour majors, it's going to be all that tough, you know, much more tough. But Jerry's got a 4 or 5 year window here where I think he's going to continue to do a lot of damage, I think.
Well, after watching last year's Schwab Cup finals, and you know, the leaderboards have changed dramatically with this rookie class. You mentioned Furyk. You know, Els was kind of in it last year, but is really come on. Had trouble closing yesterday, and that's been a bit of a problem. Mike Weir had a great tournament, finished 65-69 for a T4, along with Retief Goosen, who Jerry Kelly beat in the playoff at the 2019 American Family Insurance Championship. Robert Carlson, who I believe had to go through the Q School, because a lot of these European Tour guys just don't make enough money to qualify based on career earnings to be exempt out on the Senior Tour. But guys like that are starting to come over and be a factor. And you mentioned, you know, Phil Mickelson, KJ Choi, you know, again, Steve Stricker, if he were to commit to be full-time. And you know, we asked, you know, Steve the question, you know, do you ever see a time when all those guys in this class will be, you know, regulars out there? And he doesn't, because they can play back there. But to kind of put a bow on our conversation here through the first two segments of our Talking.Golf, I think you're going to see fewer guys want to stick out there, Gary, if we see more Bryson DeChambeau's, you know, making the average drive needed to survive out there, you know, push that to 300. I think these guys that are hitting, you know, averaging 260, 270, you know, maybe 280, you know, right now feel they can at least, you know, be in contention if their putter gets hot. But, you know, if they're going to be forced to bomb at 300 yards, I think that's gonna send a lot of 50-year-olds back to the senior circuit pretty quick.
I agree, Rob. Who knows what's coming along the pike as college kids get out and get on tour and get their cards. But I think you're right. It is a trend. I mean, Brooks Koepka's got a bad knee right now, but he's certainly in that bomber category, the big, strong guy. There's going to be more like these guys coming along. And I think you're right. A guy like Mike Weir, like Jerry Kelly, those guys hit it, you know, 275, 280. That you can compete at that length, but only if you hit every fairway, hit a lot of greens, and make a lot of putts. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to keep up with that length.
That's right. Well, it was a fun weekend of golf. And then one more thing to just mention, that was that Casey Danielson got a start on the LPGA Tour, made the cut, finished, I believe, tied for 67th. So had a open 69, finished with a pair of 75s. She should be back this week on the Symetra Tour. She tries to get inside that top five to get full-time status for next year. And a little blurb in the Minneapolis paper over the weekend, too, that said Charlie Danielson, Casey's brother, who's been battling knee injuries, is close to getting back to where he can work out again. And I believe December was kind of the date where he was looking to be able to maybe get a chance to, kind of test the knee. And so we may hear a little bit from Charlie Danielson coming down the pike a little bit, but that's a family that's had quite an impact in golf. And Charlie Danielson's been through a lot of pain here the last couple of years. And they said that he should be cleared to resume hitting golf balls in December or next spring and then return to pro competition. And that would be wonderful for Charlie, because he's 26 right now. I'm guessing maybe 28 by the time that he would be close to 100%. Still time to do what Charlie Danielson wants to do in the game of golf, Gary.
Such a shame that what he's gone through with his knee, Rob. He had such a bright future and still does. But this knee has really derailed him. I mean, I know he's been down in the dumps about it. I talked to him several months ago, and he said he was, starting to explore what he might do if golf doesn't work out. We hope that's not the case. We hope that he's, back competing soon. And then you look at Brooks Koepka's got sounds like a very similar injury, meniscus. When you get a torn meniscus or holes in your meniscus, as Charlie Danielson has had, that seems to be very tough to come back from. And let's hope that Brooks Koepka makes a full recovery and that we see Charlie, out on one of these tours one of these days soon.
And last but not least, U.S. Open talk. We had two caddies in the tournament. Alex Noren had Austin Gaugert on the bag from Lake Geneva. Eric Van Rooyen had Alex Gaugert, Austin's brother, in the bag. Alex Noren with one of the rounds of the day on the third round is 67. And then, of course, Mario Tiziani in the bag of Steve Stricker. So, again, a lot of ways, Gary D'Amato, to make an impact in the game of golf. And Wisconsin natives are finding a way. And I tell you what, I got a chance to talk to Austin on Saturday after that 67. And that put him right on the doorstep of the top 10 in the U.S. Open. And we talk about it not being easy to play in the U.S. Open. Can you imagine what it's like to caddy in a U.S. Open and have to look down and advise your guy on what club to hit and how to stay out of that rough, or how to, you had to come at angles. The greens were at wing foot were so, their tilling has greens and were so contoured. Boy, my mind would be numb after 4 days doing that.
There's pressure on those caddies, Rob. There's a ton of pressure on those guys. I mean, not only the math part, people think it's so easy, but I mean, they have to come up with numbers extremely quickly. I mean, they've got seconds to come up with numbers, yardage to the front, middle and back. Okay. We've got a wind quartering into us. That's going to add, 6 yards. But you want to land it. You want to get over this ridge on the green. I mean, they're thinking of all this stuff, and then they've got to know the right thing to say at the right time to their player too. I mean, it's part psychologist, right? You have to, you can send a player off on the rails by saying the wrong thing. So it's not an easy job. And for people who think it's just throw some clubs over your shoulders and walk along and make a lot of money, it ain't that easy.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's a sports talk host that could be a caddy out there, because they tend to shoot from the lip and not the hip.
Yeah.
Or a little bit of both, I guess. But And then it was funny because Austin Gogret said that Alex Noren doesn't carry a yardage book, Gary. So it's all on the caddy to come up with the numbers. By the same token, though, Alex Noren doesn't ask for advice on putts. He reads those by himself. So, you know, you give and you take. But everybody's got their own little routine. And that's why you see so many golfers so reluctant to part ways with caddies, because it takes a long time to develop that relationship.
Rob, I caddied once in the GMO, not in the GMO, but in the qualifying for a guy named David Schultz. He was from Texas, trying to get into the Monday qualify his way into the GMO. And I was just a kid. I didn't know anything about caddying, but I ran into him at Willow's Golf Range on 27th Street. I asked him if he needed a caddy. He said he did. And I'll never forget, on the first hole, he hit the green, and he turned to me, and I started walking away with his bag toward the green. He said, "Son, as soon as my ball lands on the green, I want that putter in my hand." And boy, I just, yes, sir, you know, grab the putter out of the bag and hand it to him. But, I mean, there's a lot to think about when you caddy. There really is.
Well, after a grueling weekend of tournament golf, then comes Monday, probably the most relaxing day in all of golf. And, Gary D'Amato, you got to relax and enjoy some golf today at the Juvenile Diabetes Outing of Geneva National. You played the Trevino course. Those are fun. I know you play a lot of these great outings. What was today like, and is there anything better than a Monday outing?
Today was a lot of fun, Rob. We had great weather. We had a really good foursome. Got to play with Courtney Matschke, who attends, you know, who's on the UW Green Bay women's golf team. Really fine young player. Crushed driver. She got to play from the red tees. And I think we used one of our drives out of 18 holes. The rest of the other 17 were her tee shots, because she hit it as far as us, if not farther, and she was starting 50 yards ahead of us. Really good young player. I'm going to be excited to watch her scores in the coming years and see what she does in golf. But we had the cause is very good. TF for the Cure, it was for juvenile diabetes research. Courtney Matschke has type 1 diabetes. So she gave a testimonial, and it's just, these things are a lot of fun, and they're all for good causes. And it was a great group, fun guys to play with today. So I had a great time.
And the outing circuit in Wisconsin keeps building. There's new ones, great ones added every year. The Max Fund has a ton of great golf outings. Gary D'Amato, if you were to handicap or assess what makes a great outing, what would be your top two or three items?
Oh, that's a good question, Rob. I prefer the format we played today. We played a shamble where everyone hits a drive, you pick the best drive, and then you play your own ball in. One low ball per foursome. I prefer that to a scramble. Scrambling, but a shamble, you're at least sort of playing your own ball a lot of the time anyway, after the tee shot. So you're a little more into it. You're focusing and concentrating a little more than if it's a scramble where the guys are drinking beers and just having fun. One thing I'm against at outings, Rob, is unlimited mulligans. You know, you can buy 50, 30, yes. 25, 30 mulligans, and then guys come in with scores of 21 under par. I don't think that's right. All the causes are good. The Mac Fund, of course, has a great one. TF for the Cure. I've played in the Klum Family Foundation for Make a Wish, and they're all great causes. And people pay a lot of money to play in these things and to raise money for good causes, and they're all fun.
What's your favorite post outing food, Gary? Are you a steak or a chicken guy?
Rob, I missed.
Uh-oh, Gary, I think did you catch that one? Are you a steak or chicken guy after your round?
Today we had lasagna, and it was really good at Geneva National. Really good stuff. Good dinner.
Well, they must have known you were in the field then. That's right up your alley.
That's right, lasagna. And good dessert and good company, so it was a good time.
Your the keys to a great outing, and they were nailed today for Gary D'Amato and the crew out at the Geneva National Golf Club in Lake Geneva over there on the Trevino course. Gary, I'm glad you got that in, and I know our kind of window for golf is starting to shrink here a little bit, but hopefully a few more rounds, few more outings in you, and We'll have more talking.golf next week. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Rob. I'm at Whistling Straits tomorrow. Ryder Cup week, it would have been. So this is going to be a fun week. Fun round.
It sure will. Yeah. And we should tease that. It would have been Ryder Cup week, which means if you look at the temperatures for this week, it would have been a good week for a Ryder Cup in Wisconsin. So we'll compare the weather we get this week with what we get in 2021 when all things, God willing, we'll be able to have that baby on Wisconsin fairway. So we can't wait to read who you run into, why they're there, and how the course setup is. It'd be fun to see if they actually, you know, put some pins in some Ryder Cup positions. So Gary D'Amato going from one great golf course to another, such is the life of my colleague here at Wisconsin.golf.
I'm lucky.
Well, folks,
I'm lucky, bro.
You are lucky. You are lucky. Well, folks, you've been listening to Talking.golf, sponsored by Southwest Wisconsin Technical College in Fenimore. Did you know that Southwest Tech is the place for people with a passion for golf? That's right. They offer a golf course management program with a 100% job placement rate. The program helps students learn the industry and turn that passion into a rewarding career. The golf course management program at Southwest Tech is led by PGA professional Scott Kennedy. He also coaches the Chargers golf team in the NJCAA. Men, women, there are opportunities for everyone at Southwest Tech in Fenimore. To learn more, go to swtc.edu/golf. For Gary, I'm Rob. This has been Talking.golf. We'll talk again next week.